tells everybody in the room there that is going to be at the meeting?
Yes, we're ready here and here for you, Commissioner Jensen.
Okay. Well, let's call this meeting to order. It's a special meeting of the Game Fish and Parks Commission on Wednesday, July 24, 2019, at 1 o'clock Central. Rachel, maybe the first thing, would you do a roll call, please, so we can make sure everybody's been able to connect?
Yes. Commissioner Boyd?
Here.
Lacken?
Here.
Bees? Olson?
Here.
Whitmire?
Here.
Phillips?
Here.
Sharp?
Here.
And Jensen, of course. Commissioner Bees, one more time. We have a quorum. With that, I'll check with the local offices. Rapid City, each office, I will ask the staff there that's leading the call to introduce themselves and the attendees. We'll begin with Rapid City.
Here, it's Regional Wildlife Manager Chris Cudmore. I've got John Carrero in attendance, Michelle Buckles, Greg Simpson, and Fisheries Head Jake. Here, that's all that's here currently.
Sioux Falls.
Todd St. Sauber, Area Fisheries Supervisor. Staff with us include Josh Delger and Benjamin Shaw, and we have one visitor, Wade Hiller from South Dakota Walleyes Unlimited.
Watertown?
Watertown's here. This is Mike Lasowski, Regional Wildlife Supervisor. There is no public in attendance.
I will also ask, because I know we have some callers calling in from the Chamberlain office.
Mark Ohm, Regional Supervisor here with John Ohm, Strategic Communications Director, and we have one member of the public, Kevin Swenson from Swenson Brothers Marina.
And here, I'm here, Director Life.
Yeah, Tony Life here. We have about a dozen staff. I won't go through all of them here. A dozen department staff, those of which will be presenting information on the call include John Katilnik, staff attorney, and John Lott, our chief of aquatic resources. We also have Jason Simmons from the governor's office with us here today, and two members of or staff of Bureau of Reclamation, Stacy Meyer and Chris Haynes, both from Pier.
And that concludes our roll call.
Okay, thank you. This is Chris Long Henry. Me and Jason Sorensen are also calling in from Chamberlain.
Kevin Roebling's on the line as well. Thank you.
Thanks. So I'll read this conflict of interest disclosure before we begin. Now is the time for the commission to consider any written or verbal disclosures of conflicts of interest by current and former commission members. If any member of the commission has completed a written disclosure of a conflict of interest, the commission will consider the disclosure at this time. If any commission member wishes to verbally disclose an interest in a contract, as defined in SDCL 3-23-1, a direct benefit from a contract as defined in SDCL 3-23-1 and 3-23-2, or any other conflict, with any matter on today's agenda, please identify the contract or other matter in which you have the conflict of interest and generally describe the nature of the conflict. Also, if during the meeting you become aware that you have a conflict of interest with any proposed contract or other matter, please notify the chair of the conflict and generally describe the nature of the conflict. If you disclose a conflict of interest, the commission must vote on whether the matter underlying the conflict is fair, reasonable, and not contrary to the public interest. You may not participate in the commission's discussion and vote on the conflict. Does anyone have a conflict to disclose? Hearing none, then we'll go on to the next item on the agenda, which I believe is going to be John Kotelnik, our legal counsel, who will describe the process that brings us here today, the emergency rules and the notice requirements and how we get here. John?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, for the record, John Kotelnik, staff attorney for Game Fish and Parks. Commissioners, you're very familiar with the rule promulgation process because we go through it on a monthly basis. The emergency rule process is obviously an abbreviated version of that, and it allows to take into account situations where a rule needs to be acted on and immediately. And per statute, that threat or that reason for, the reason for the implementation of the new rule has to mean that there's an imminent threat to the public welfare, or something along those lines. So in some of the documents I think were sent out, there was a statement of necessity for the emergency rule, and we've kind of walked through why the zebra mussel warrants this meeting. I mean, the new founding of it in Lake Sharp and the presumption that it's in Lake Francis Case. There are very minimal timing requirements in relation to the regular rules promulgation process. The only real timing requirement is that as soon as we turn in our rules, our draft rules to LRC, they have 3 days to get them back to us, and they've already done that. So they've reviewed it for legal sufficiency and have given us the okay. There's just a couple minor grammatical corrections that you don't need to take action on that I will just correct when I submit the final copy to the Secretary of State. That also being said is that it doesn't have to go in front of the Interim Rules Review Committee. We can file it with the Secretary of State as soon as I get all of your signatures. So today I overnighted that Form 11. Well, it's called Form something else because it's an emergency rule, but it's the Form 11 that you guys are used to seeing where you all sign it saying, yes, we adopted this rule, yes, we adopted this rule. And Chairman Jensen, you have that additional form that you as a chairman said, yes, a hearing took place and we adopted this rule. So I have overnighted those documents to you. Inside that envelope is a return overnight envelope, so all you need to do is put your signature on it and get it back in the mail. As soon as I have those documents back, those signed documents, I need the actual hard copies, I can submit that with the Secretary of State. As soon as it's filed with the Secretary of State, it becomes effective, as opposed to the normal rule promulgation, which is 20 days after filing. So that's kind of it in a nutshell, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
John. Tony here, Commissioner John. You might want to add some follow-up action that we're going to have, the effectiveness of this particular rule, and what follow-up action we're going to be asking for.
Thank you, Tony. So, yes, emergency rules are good for 90 days. So this would also require the commission to take more formal action going through our regular rules process to formalize a permanent rule. So, again, this is just a temporary rule until we can meet at a later date to have a formal proposal and then go through our process of public input and then finalization like you guys are accustomed to. Thank you, Tony.
Thank you, John. Does anybody have questions for John? Any questions? If not, then we'll move to Tony and John Lott are going to introduce, if you will, this proposed rule and provide the background history for what brings us here on that substantive rule.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. John Lott here, Aquatic Resources Chief. Good afternoon to members of the Commission as well. This afternoon before you, we have an action item. Again, it'd be an emergency rule that would involve the adoption of the addition of Lake Francis Case and Lake Sharp to the list of waters that are treated as containment waters. And before the consideration of that by the Commission, I would like to go into some background just on how we got here, some overview of the AIS program we have in the state, and what this action would mean if the Commission adopts it. Zebra mussels have been in the United States since the mid-late 1980s, and over time they have moved progressively westward. We first had zebra mussels documented in South Dakota as reproducing populations in 2015 in Lakes Lewis and Clark and the Missouri River below Lewis and Clark Reservoir. And since then, in 2017, zebra mussels were documented in McCook Lake and in Lake Yankton, both waters that are associated with the Missouri River. This month, in July of 2019, zebra mussels were discovered in Lake Sharp. The Corps of Engineers initially brought some mussels to GF&P staff to be identified, and they were confirmed to be zebra mussels. Staff surveys of Big Bend Dam showed that we're pretty much in the early stages of any infestation. It is considered an infestation because there are multiple year classes of mussels present, and they would have the potential then to reproduce. With that in mind, the department has over time taken a number of actions to help to slow and control the spread of aquatic invasive species in South Dakota. Specifically with regards to zebra mussels, some of the key administrative rules implemented by the commission would include the prohibition on transporting a boat or other watercraft with a plug in place or any valves that would control the storage of water open, except when in a boat ramp parking area. So in other words, if you're not in the parking area right at the boat ramp there, you'd have to have your plugs pulled, not in place, and the valves that would control anything like a live well open so water's able to drain. That rule has been in place for about 4 years now. In association with that, there's another rule that prohibits the transport of fish and aquatic bait in water from a lake, river, or stream. Both those rules are specifically aimed at reducing the amount of water that is transported between water bodies. That's been one of the main focuses of GF&P and Commission efforts to slow the spread. With regards to why the focus on water, when you're looking at species like zebra mussel, the young called veligers are very small. They're small enough that they're not able to be seen by the human eye. And as a result, you're not able to see them in the water that you may be transporting. So reducing the amount of water being transported is key there. With regards to some other actions that the department has undertaken in regards to the current infestations around Lewis and Clark in the Missouri River, one was the establishment of containment waters, and that is what the call today is about, adding Lake Sharp and then Lake Francis Case on the list of containment waters. And what a containment water is a body of water, again, with a reproducing population of zebra mussels, a water that's considered infested, and the whole idea by having it as a containment water is to contain zebra mussels to that water and prevent their spread elsewhere. In association with a body of water being listed as a containment water, there are two specific requirements that have to do with decontamination. If a boat uses containment water, and that boat is not able to drain all the water out of it, and a gallon or more of water remains, That boat then would need to be decontaminated before its next launch. Likewise, a boat that's been moored at a marina or anywhere in the water for three or more continuous days in a containment water would also need to be decontaminated prior to its subsequent launch. In association with those requirements and establishment of containment waters at the current area of the state that has zebra mussel infestations, the southeast along the Missouri River corridor there, a local boat program has been established to aid the boaters in the local area to not have to decontaminate as long as they stay within that area associated with the containment water. However, if they were to leave that area, then they would have to perform a decontamination. And that, of course, would have to be done before they launch into a new water body. With that in mind, Mr. Chairman, are there any questions that the commission may have or any other topics they would like me to address with regards to the action before the commission this afternoon?
John, could you explain some more of this by, I know you've used the word game changer, the fact that these mussels are now in Lake Sharp and presumably Francis Case. Can you explain why that is? And then what is the consequence of having these mussels in these bodies of water, at least the potential consequences, and who does that affect?
Mr. Chair, with every body of water, there's a certain pattern in the users of that body of water. As an example, down by Lake Lewis and Clark in the Missouri River, the majority of the people who would use those bodies of water would be from the Sioux Falls area, right along the river there in South Dakota, and then states like Nebraska and Iowa. When you begin to get up into the middle Missouri River system, both Lake Sharp and Francis Case are destination lakes for people throughout the state and other states as well. Just some background information there on Lake Sharp, the last 2 years in angler surveys only, so this is only the anglers. About 23% of the anglers on Lake Sharp were non-residents. If we look at Francis Case, that jumps up to 38%. So these are both certainly destination lakes where there are anglers who come there and then go other places. With Lake Sharp, the major population centers in the state all have residents that regularly use Lake Sharp. With Francis Case, that's also the case, with the majority of those in-state users again being concentrated from I-90 South. The main east-west highways in the state are very much linked with patterns and angler use of the Missouri River system in South Dakota. So you have the potential for an angler, for a boater, to be in Lake Sharp or Francis Case, and then within a few days to be elsewhere in another body of water in South Dakota. They may spend a weekend out at Lake Sharp, let's say West Bend or something, out there camping, and then that next week they may be back in Watertown and they may be fishing Lake Campesca, a dry lake number two, Lake Ponset. So the potential here, and the reason that I stated I considered it a game changer, was just the expansion in the diversity of the users with regards to their geographic location within the state and out of state. The focus there.
Thank you.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that's the reason behind the focus on containment waters. After a particular body of waters infested, the objective then is to help contain the infestation to that water and not have it spread elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of places they could spread from Lake Sharp and Francis Case.
And what about the consequences? What can happen? I mean, what do these mussels do or potentially can they do in a lake
fishing and water distribution and whatever else. I mean, which also plays into why we're having this emergency special meeting.
Well, Mr. Chairman, zebra mussels are able to filter up to a liter of water, about a quarter of water a day per mussel. So when you start to get into heavier densities of mussels, they really are able to affect the nutrients and the plankton in the water. What's interesting, though, is there's very few instances where that has resulted in a big downturn in the quality of a fishery. The main impacts across the country that are seen really have to do with surface water users. Anybody who pumps water from a surface water that has zebra mussels has to deal with the issues of them colonizing on the pipes, ending up in the pumps, affecting the cooling systems. As an example, in the power plants, the hydro power plants, the zebra mussels end up in the cooling systems. They grow in there, they plug them. As a result, they're not able to cool the generators. So there's a lot of impacts for surface water users there. Irrigation would be another one, municipalities. When you start talking about recreation, shoreline users, boaters who would use the shore, maybe beachgoers, they would have to deal with the shells, the windrows of the shells up on the beach as they die off and pile up there. Those shells can be very sharp and result in cuts on feet and reduce the recreational use of those areas. So, you know, there is certainly an impact there on the aquatic ecosystem. It has rarely resulted in a substantial downturn in a fishery. It's mostly the surface water users where you have those major impacts that are easily identified.
So if I could ask one more, and then maybe we can have a motion to on this proposed regulation. But the last background question I would ask is, we do have some actual experience, the state does, with the financial consequences that is associated with these mussels from down by Yankton, right? And then we're also in the process of trying to study that for the rest of the state based on a model that maybe we're going to modify from Montana. But could you address that too, the financial consequences that attach to this or can?
Mike, do you have any idea on numbers or?
Sure.
Mr. Chair, Mike Greiner, the Aquatic Invasive Species Coordinator with the department, has some background information on those costs that were shared by some of the participants in a meeting last December on how to mitigate impacts of zebra mussels in South Dakota.
So, Mr. Chairman and members of the Commission, from that mussel summit that we had in Yankton last December, some of the projects were proposed projects that hadn't been implemented yet, but for the ones that have been, at Gavin's Point Dam, they've spent, almost $3 million on retrofitting the dam to deal with both Asian clam and zebra mussel, with annual costs and maintenance and staff hours of $120,000. As well as another $50,000 in various tools and supplies. The Milford Municipal Utilities, a rural water source in Iowa, they spent $1.3 million on their facility. And Spirit Lake Fish Hatchery in Iowa has a proposal for a $1.7 million project to protect their hatchery from any mussels.
Briefly talk about that Montana study that's gone on, and I know you're in the middle of trying to conform that in some way to South Dakota, but could you just summarize what they did over there and what you're looking at?
Sure. So what Montana did was try to provide a framework for states and various entities to try and come up with estimators in their state using widely available surface water usage data that's free for download from the U.S. Geological Survey. And what they did was kind of a large-scale literature review looking at various impacts either to fisheries resources, boating, tourism, recreation, property value losses, et cetera, and then creating kind of a range of effects, a low to a high effect, and then using the water usage multipliers to come up with an overall estimate. It's a useful tool, but to look at a fine scale, you'd need to have that data, and because it's kind of statewide data, it would be a doomsday scenario of every single water body on in your state being infested to a high level. And so what we put in a proposal to do was to get funding to kind of fine-tune this to areas already infested, both in South Dakota and in Kansas. And that's going through the grant proposal process with the Fish and Wildlife Service right now. And hopefully that'll get funded so we can kind of have some better estimators generated for our state.
Okay, thank you. So how about we do it this way? Is there a motion to approve this proposed emergency rule and the second? And then if there is, we can have some discussion.
This is Commissioner Phillips. I would make a motion to finalize the emergency amendment to containment water rules to include Lake Sharp and Francis Case.
This is Commissioner Boyd. I would second.
Okay, so with that motion and second, have some discussion. Who?
It's hard over the phone, so just go ahead and... Yes, go ahead.
I have a question, Mr. Chairman, for John Lott. And would there what's the possibility of doing something especially pertinent to Lake Oahe? I mean, Lake Oahe is right above Sharp, and it's very conceivable that a boater could be in Sharp in the morning and Oahe in the afternoon. Doesn't that pose a heightened risk because of their closeness to each other?
Mr. Chair and Commissioner Phillips, there certainly is a heightened risk there with Lake Oahe being so near to Lake Sharp. One nice thing right now is that the zebra mussel infestation in Lake Sharp is at the very early stages. The only place they've been documented so far has been down at the lower end of the reservoir. And the hope is that we'll be able to take into consideration factors like that and come up with an operating plan for how to handle things in the field next year. As was mentioned by John Kotelnik, these regulations, if approved today, adopted today, would be good for 90 days, and at the September meeting of the commission, there'll be an opportunity to bring forth some longer-term changes to rules as recommendations to the commission. And my hope would be that that's something that we were able to take into account there. When you look at the management approach to zebra mussels by the Department of Game, Fish, and Parks, the use of regulations that are promulgated by the commission is very important. Overall, that helps a lot with compliance. We have a presence in the field for outreach and education. We annually have a very strong marketing campaign. And we have law enforcement activities that are all built into that approach to AIS management. And the fact that Oahe is so near to Lake Sharp is something I'm sure that we will consider in developing that approach and any rules that would be recommended.
Thank you.
more discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
This is Commissioner Boyd. Thank you. John, a question for you regarding boat inspections. So with what Commissioner Phillips just described and you addressed, you know, transport between the two lakes there, is now a time to talk about boat inspections, or is that something we need to delay until September?
Mr. Chair and Commissioner Boyd, we can certainly talk about anything this afternoon that that you would like to talk about. I believe you're referring to the compliance issues with the prohibition on having your boat plug in place if you're not in a boat ramp parking area. And I don't know what you would change there.
Okay. Just to follow up, my thought process was, could we, is it doable to increase inspections during this interim time?
That certainly would be a possibility, and that's something that, Mark Ohm, as regional supervisor for the upper portion of the Missouri River Corridor, would be working on with his staff. And I believe Mark's on the phone this afternoon. Mark, would you help address Commissioner Boyd's question, please?
Certainly. This is Mark Ohm, regional supervisor out of Chamberlain here. Chairman and Commissioner Boyd, John's right. We are working on increasing patrols right now through just normal patrols from individual officers, and also through what I would term a saturation patrol, where we have a group of officers go in and inspect boats coming in and out of ramps at that time. We don't have anything solid in place right now for that, other than just increased personal patrols, but we are working on some plans for the immediate future to do so.
Commissioner Boyd, in addition, we do have crews out of the Fort Pierre office and the Chamberlain office for the watercraft inspection and decontamination portion of the overall AIS program. And they will be out. We'll certainly be focusing those on the areas on Sharp and Francis case where we think we'll be able to have the most impact at informing boaters of the new regulation, and also how to take best management practices to slow the spread. One other thing that that Mike Greiner brought to my attention was that we do next week have in Yankton a opportunity for our law staff and some other staff within the department to be trained by the experts in the field on inspecting and decontaminating watercraft. So it's just very timely that Mike was already working on that, and we had that in the works to get some of our staff trained, and I believe we do have some Region 2 staff who will be amongst those attending the class.
Thank you. Very good news.
I have one more
question. More discussion?
Another question, Mr. Chairman.
Sure. Commissioner Phillips.
Commissioner Phillips. For John, I'm sure it is John Lott. In the rules, we have a one-gallon rule. You have to drain everything except for 1 gallon. And then we also have a three-day rule, I believe, that if the boat's moored for 3 days. I think between now and September, when we make these rules permanent, those are two things that should be looked at. I mean, 1 gallon of water can still contain a lot of these villagers, correct?
That is very true. The basis in the 1 gallon, Commissioner Phillips, is that for boats that have a internal bladder that holds extra water to hold the back end of the boat deeper in the water for a larger wake, those boats are not able to pump all the water out of those boats. So the 1 gallon was simply used to indicate a boat that still retains water, and obviously those would have a gallon or more. But we certainly are planning between now and the September commission meeting to thoroughly look at the AIS rules that are in place and bring forth any recommended changes.
I think that 1 gallon of water in that boat is a problem we need to address.
Commissioner Phillips, Tony Leif here, Division Director. If you'll note, too, that gallon of water is the threshold that does require the boat to be decontaminated. So that is what we have on the books right now, is if it does have that gallon of water, which we agree is concerning, the requirement is in place then that that boat be decontaminated before it can be taken to any other water. So, and this is adding Lake Sharp and Lake Francis Case to those waters where that gallon of water has to be decontaminated, or that boat that holds that water has to be decontaminated before it can go anywhere else.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Commissioner Sharp.
Commissioner Sharp, one question I have, and John, I mentioned it to you before, is that, I really agree with the direction we're heading. I think it's problematic when we're insisting on mandatory decontamination in some circumstances, and yet decontamination is really not accessible that much across the state. And so I think we almost need to have parallel paths here where we come up with rules and regulations that prevent the, spreading of AIS. But we also need to have a parallel path to figure out how we can help get more people in the business or create more stations of where boats can be decontaminated. Because in my mind, we're almost asking the public to meet a standard that there is no way to meet it. So that's my concern.
Certainly, Commissioner Sharp, and that is one where we do need to be talking about the infrastructure that's available to assist the public in complying with regulations. We do, in the Yankton area, have 4 pressure washers that are down there with businesses that are able to perform decontaminations according to established protocols. That is something in the Sharp and Chamberlain area that we'll have to begin working on to have in place for this fall. Again, one nice thing with a Sharp and Case right now is that the infestation in Sharp is at a relatively new level, and the marina that we do have in Sharp's at the upper end. But we certainly will be talking about how to provide infrastructure to help facilitate the public's ability to comply.
Mr. Chairman, follow-up?
Sure. Yes.
John, with your contacts across the country, has any state or region really come up with a great system for decontamination of boats in a timely and convenient fashion? And if they have, is there any way we could, duplicate their efforts?
Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Sharp, I was all ready to answer your question with a yes up until the point where you said a timely and convenient fashion. And that really throws into or brings in one of the concerns. There are states, as you move across the country from east to west, the states on the west of the Great Plains typically have a very comprehensive watercraft inspection and decontamination program. And the plan that we've shared with you before that shows the range or the scope of possible AIS responses in South Dakota has examples of that, where those states in the West have both border checks, whereas you're coming in, you have to stop, have your boat inspected, possibly decontaminated. And in states that have infested waters, there's a very large containment effort on those waters. So there certainly is a way to approach it out west. As you go east, you don't see that approach. We happen to be right in the middle here in the Great Plains, and especially in South Dakota, we have a lot of glacial lakes, a lot of bodies of water that are actively managed and used, like states like Minnesota, Wisconsin. And we also have parts of the state where we have a smaller number of waters and they're all artificial impoundments, as you have in the western states. So one thing for South Dakota, I think, is to figure out what's right for South Dakota. And given the wide range we have out there for resources and how mussels spread, what's really feasible for South Dakota? I don't have that answer for you today, though.
More discussion? John, part of this involves budget and finances and what can the department afford, and we'll probably talk maybe more about that when we get to the letter, but are there things that in your department, your opinion, that should be, that we should do now, but it's not provided for in the budget, therefore should we be looking at the budget to rearrange it if we need to in order to properly respond to this mussel problem, given that it's summer and people are using Lake Sharp a lot every day?
Mr. Chairman, with the ages of the mussels we have in Lake Sharp, we've likely had them in there a year or two. We're over halfway through the boating season this year. I think this package of emergency regulations is a good approach to get us through this season, and then I think we really do as a state need to regroup and take a hard look at our approach. With regards to resources within the department, we can always reassign resources to various things, but there's a lot of needs out there. And I don't believe I'm the one to make a decision or to say that this should be the issue that we reallocate resources to instead of another issue that may be just as important.
Okay. Any more discussion? Any discussion?
Mr. Chairman?
Commissioner Sharp.
Yeah, Commissioner Sharp here. I'm going to reiterate again, I think we need to be very cognizant of creating regulations and rules that the practicality of the public being able to meet them is going to be, you know, very hard. So we just need to be cognizant of that. You know, the drain plug thing, I think, is... I think that's pretty obvious, but where we have mandatory decontamination or anything else we come up with, and yet there's no outlet for that to be done, we just got to be, as John says, you know, this 90-day thing will buy us some time, but we really got to come up with whether our expectations can meet reality or not.
Thank you. Any more discussion?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Whitmire.
Yeah, Commissioner Whitmire here. Signage, I guess there's been past discussions on this and that communication to the public, and especially on these containment waters. I think anything that the department can do to increase that visibility to the users at the point of which they're using these waters before leaving them, that that this is a containment water and special regards need to be taken on the plugs and whatnot. So between now and September, you know, we can do whatever we can, at least to get that word out and clear communication to the users that what the risks and even responsibilities should be for using those. So I guess I would just bring that up, that it would be just comforting, I guess, and good direction, I guess, if they can get some kind of budgeting for increased signage, even in the near term, for the balance of this year's use.
And Mr. Chair and Commissioner Whitmire, we do have some signs available right here in Fort Pierre, and as soon as, if the commission adopts the proposal, as soon as the regulation would be in place, we would have signs posted. Then from there, we'll certainly work the the staff and fisheries and law enforcement will work together to work on a best approach here for Sharpen Case for helping make anglers and boaters aware.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Sharp?
Follow up on Commissioner Whitmire's comments. It would be also potentially helpful if we could have a very high-profile official do public service announcements concerning AIS, you know, at Lewis and Clark and now up to Francis Case and Sharp, and indicate that, you know, while it's frustrating to be pulled over with your boat plug still in your boat, the fact of the matter is it's been a law for 3-4 years. We're trying to save the water bodies of the state of South Dakota. So it's time to, you know, pay attention, pull the plugs on your boats, and if you are pulled over, let's not rough up everybody. I think a regular repeat from a high-profile official would certainly help us get the message to the field, certainly as well as signs on a dock might.
Mr. Chairman, hey. Commissioner Sharp, I just,
yes,
just wanted to add, when Commissioner Sharp began talking, I thought he was going to suggest that Secretary Hepler help with decontaminations and pier here at Downs Marina, but I'm sure that's something that that the department can consider.
Any more discussion? If not, Rachel, would you call a roll and vote for aye or nay?
You bet. In regards to adoption of the rule, first we have Boyd.
Yes.
Aye.
Locken.
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Whitmire?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Sharp?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
All in favor.
All right, that's good. And then the next thing we have on the agenda is a draft letter that we as the commission would send to the governor, recognizing that this is a statewide problem that affects many far beyond game, fish, and parks, asking her to lead a statewide call to action, if you will, involving all stakeholders, public and private, to develop and implement a comprehensive response to the significant environmental, cultural, social, and economic threat presented by zebra mussels and other aquatic invasive species in our state, and also including letting the governor know that we're ready, willing, and able to help where we can and as much as we can. So everybody's had a copy of that letter. So maybe we should have some discussion about it, and we probably could use a motion approving it and directing that it be sent.
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Phillips.
I just wanted to say I think the letter's good. I think it clearly articulates that we need a statewide coordinated approach. I certainly think we should send it. And I also appreciate the fact that included in there is the fact that we are willing and able to help any way we can. And I'm sure the commission stands ready to, do our part in this coordinated approach. But it is bigger than just this commission or this department. And we do need a coordinated approach statewide.
Any other comments, discussion? Any comments?
You need a motion to send the letter?
Yeah, I think that would probably be best.
I move we send the letter.
Second, Sharp.
Any discussion on that motion? Any discussion? If not, all Rachel, would you do a roll call again?
Yes.
Aye and nay.
Boyd?
Aye.
Locken?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Whitmire?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Sharp?
Aye.
And Jensen?
Aye.
All in favor.
Thank you. Then the only other thought, the other subject that I know some are interested in is the issue of fines for violation of the plug rule and I suppose the containment rule. And I think that is set at $87. And I know there's some concern about whether that's sufficient and some interest in increasing that. I don't think we can do that today, but John Kotelnik can explain that process and how it works. I don't think that'll take very long, but I know there are some that are interested in that. John, could you explain how that works?
Sure, Mr. Chair. Again, for the record, John Kotelnik, staff attorney. I just want to qualify my answers with everything that I've learned this last week about the fine and bond schedule has been through Andy Albin, who's also sitting in the room, so I will encourage him to jump in at any point if I misstate something. So once a year there's a fine and bond schedule that comes out. There is a set of judges that sit on a committee that get together and take input from the various departments. Andy is our lead from that department recommending changes for increases. When they recommend changes for increases on those fines, they have to be justified by facts, increased deficiencies or increased noncompliance, things like that. So there has to be substantial reasons why the increase is requested. So they do this once a year. I know that Chairman Jensen had asked, you know, is it possible to do it partway through the year? And the answer I guess I received is maybe. Again, it kind of depends on up to that panel of judges that sit on that committee on whether or not they want to change the fine and bond schedule halfway through the year. It's not done very often, and again, it would have to be supported by substantial facts that would justify that increase. As you mentioned, Chairman Jensen, the commission doesn't have the authority to change that fee increase, so it would require going through that judicial committee and. Like I said, Andy kind of does that. Andy does do that every year around February, and they start asking for input on the adjustments. I'll look into Andy if I miss anything. Andy, go ahead and jump in.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, Andy Albin here. The one thing I would add to John's comments, we have statewide increased our enforcement efforts this year. We have done more patrols and saturation details aimed at AIS enforcement. So I think maybe we'll have a better idea later this year as to what compliance rates have been compared to in the past and might be able to make a more informed decision on potentially increasing those fine amounts and having that justification that would solidify that action by the presiding judges.
Okay, thank you. Anybody have any questions or comments about that subject?
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Boyd.
Mm-hmm.
How would we start that process if that's something that we need to, that we decide to pursue?
Mr. Chair?
Commissioner
Boyd, do you mean pursuing a change for next year or pursuing a change sooner than that?
I apologize. Usually the second time I ask a question, it comes out a little better than first. So if we decide to take an emergency action, if you will, and pursue a change mid-year, what would be the first couple of steps in that process?
I have a point of through the chair, sorry, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Boyd,
sure.
I've contacted an individual at the UJS system who's in charge of the fee and bond schedule. He said that it would take a formal request. It doesn't have to be something super fancy, but it could be a letter from, again, the commissioners requesting that the three-panel judge committee take a look at increasing the fines on basically a non-cycle month, if you will. So I can certainly get you that information if that's something you want to pursue. My recommended course of action is to be frank, I don't know that even if they were to accept your, I don't want to call it petition, but your request, if they were able to accept your request, I don't know that they would be able to get the fine and bond schedule updated in a timely fashion to have any kind of impact on this year's boating season. As you know, summer's winding down faster than all of us care for, but from a practical sense, I don't know that they would get it done in time. And that's just me speaking with knowing how...
Mr. Chair?
Yes?
I really was just asking the question for curiosity's sake. I'm not suggesting that we pursue that. Just for my own thought process, I wanted to know how it would work. So, thank you.
Sure. And we certainly can pursue that if anybody wants to, so... Any other comments, questions, discussions, subjects to discuss? If not, somebody want to make a motion to adjourn our special meeting?
I have a question, Mr. Chairman.
Sure.
This is Commissioner Phillips. Obviously, the other departments like Environment, Natural Resources, Transportation, Agriculture have all been contacted and they're taking a look at this also. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair.
Good question.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Phillips.
Yes,
John Lott here again. We have been in contact. There are actions being taken by some other agencies. Ones that come to mind are Transportation and Environment and Natural Resources regarding, I think with Transportation and some specific language regarding aquatic invasive species and construction equipment that would be utilizing water. With Environment and Natural Resources, they will contact our department if there is a temporary water right request from an infested water and have us provide advice for if the temporary water right should be issued or not. So there are things we're doing there. Certainly it could use more discussion, and the department's position is that it is a statewide effort.
May I follow up, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, please.
Yeah, my point is that it should be a statewide effort. These other departments hopefully are also on board and doing their part, and hopefully we can coordinate with them and obtain the desired effect. I hope we can coordinate with all the other departments.
Well, yes, and hopefully that will be one of the results or consequences of sending the letter. So I'm sure we'll all follow through, the department will follow through and follow up, and if anybody else has ideas they want to consider before September, our September meeting, we certainly can. That's how we got here to this meeting, and otherwise we should have more comprehensive information and requests and suggestions by them. So, Tony, is there anything else from your end, or Kevin, or?
Nothing here, Mr. Chairman. This is Tony.
Commissioner, Chairman Jensen, I just wanted to say thank you to the commission for being proactive on this issue. This is Kevin here, Deputy Secretary, and the department will definitely be engaged with the other departments, engaged with the commission as time goes forward. So, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome, and thank you for all the department is doing.
Mr. Chair?
Any more discussion?
Yes. John Cotillon, staff attorney again. I cannot reiterate enough that I need those signed documents back. Until I have those signed documents, I can't file the rule with the Secretary of State, and therefore the rules would not become effective. So the sooner you get those documents back, the sooner we can get this rule finalized and in effect.
All right, anything else? Hearing nothing, we're adjourned until we get together again. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.